I always opt for life, even when it's desperately hard to do, even in the midst of death and travail. That's why I walked up the stairs from the intensive care unit, where my friend Margaret was struggling to survive, to the second floor of the hospital. I'd first found my way upstairs in mid-morning, seeking respite from the life-and-death drama that unfolds, inexorably, in the lounge that serves the intensive care unit. I'd slipped quietly out of the waiting area as a weary surgeon in blood-stained scrubs slowly walked toward a mid-30s man and woman. Their faces flattened in grief as he came reluctantly closer. The doctor's rubber soles squeaked against the marble floor. It was the only sound until the mother began to moan. Cars and youth and alcohol. I didn't want to see those parents grieve. It hurt too much. So I slipped away, up the antiseptic gray stairs to the second floor and the maternity ward, where life was beginning. Yes, there could be heartbreak here, too, but not this April afternoon. One of the babies, a little boy, scrunched up a red, puckered face and began to cry, the utterly unmistakable mew of the newborn. God, how precious life is! I thought of my family, of my grandchildren. It wasn't the kind of nursery I'd expected, of course, but the only constant in life is change. A brisk nurse explained to me what appeared to be the dearth of babies. Babies today don't stay in the nursery in bassinets with cards affixed. Baby boy Jones, baby girl Smith. Today's babies are in the room with their mothers, right from the first. Sensible, of course. They spend only brief periods in the nursery, for weighing, for checking. I wandered down the hall. Many doors were open. I had other glimpses of new babies, new mothers, new adventures beginning. I returned to Margaret's bedside much refreshed. The nurse moved near. "She's conscious now, Mrs. Collins. Don't let her talk much." Margaret's hand was quiet and cool in mine. Her eyes fluttered open. "You're doing fine," I spoke quietly. "I talked to the doctor. No major damage to the heart muscle. The surgery was successful." Her breathing was shallow, her lips bluish. "Henry O." My late husband Richard gave me, Henrietta O'Dwyer Collins, that nickname. Richard used to say I packed more surprises into a single day than O. Henry ever put in a short story. "Be quiet now, Margaret. Rest." She licked her lips. I reached for the plastic cup with ice shavings, gently spooned a cool mound on her tongue. Margaret swallowed, closed her eyes in thanks. The visiting period was over. This time when I walked upstairs, it was during the shift change. A flurry of scrub-clad attendants, nurses, nursing assistants, doctors, orderlies passed me. So why did I notice the bone-thin woman who stood in the hallway? Her face was hidden behind a curtain of long, straight hair as she looked down at the infant cradled in her arms. A pale blue receiving blanket and a tiny hand. That's all I saw within the protective embrace. Faded green scrubs sagged against the woman's bony shoulders, exposed her thin wrists. A stethoscope dangled around her neck. I'd passed dozens of men and women similarly attired since I brought Margaret to the hospital late last night in the throes of a heart attack. I watched as she, nurse, nurse's aide, doctor, passed the nursery. She picked up speed. Her scuffed black leather flats slapped against the floor. Faster, faster. She reached the stairs, gave a swift look behind, and saw me. I didn't hesitate. "One moment, please," I held up my hand, imperiously, if you will, and strode quickly toward her. She stood frozen, her face impassive, her arms curved tight as steel bands around that small, helpless bundle.